Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
So, Pat Lam, give us the logistics. You are no longer officially kind of coach from when? Today? Yesterday?
May 31st. Right. So, but it's, you know, obviously I'm now officially Bristol coach, and but I'm still here in Galway. I got John Modern's getting married, and then head off to Italy with the family, but only a week, and then straight into Bristol pre-season. So not much of a break, but, you know, need to get started.
I presume the last week has been lots of goodbyes. Is that generally how it's been going for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's been, it sort of helped with finality, really, because, you know, our community where we lived, they put on a big party out of the community centre. We stood there, looked at it, and was like, we came here knowing no one, and the amount of people that were there, and then we've had barbecues and dinners, and people are, you know, inviting us around to say goodbye, and, you know, rugby, outside rugby, school friends. It's been great. And, you know, it's some lifelong memories and friendships that we've made, and I'm sure they'll visit in Bristol and or wherever I end up after that.
How are you with goodbyes? Are they deep, meaningful conversations, one-on-one with people in the corner, or do you say a few words and try not to get too deep or upset about the whole thing?
There's a bit of both. I mean, right. Obviously, when I was the Monday after Northampton game was always the toughest. I always struggle with that because it's the final finality as far as this is the last time we're together, the team of that year. And so, you know, started the day off, said goodbye to all the thanked the management team, did a management meeting, then we did a the players meeting, said goodbye to all them, and then we had you know, Connacht Rugby put on a farewell for myself, Connor McPhillips, and Paul Bunce. And gave us some presentations as far as the whole organisation. So that's always a tough one, those sort of goodbyes, because particularly with the players.
Yeah, I would think so. Especially that moment where you realise this is the last time we're all in the same room together. Because you go through so much, it's such a deep, unspoken bond. They're heavy words to just hang in the room, that this is the last time we're probably all in the same room together, everyone.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. You know, I made a point of, you know, speaking about every single player.
Right.
Gave them their goals that we started from the one-on-ones, just to highlight what they, you know, did the guys with me for 1 year, then the guys for 2 years or three, and the ones for four. And it's interesting, I think, when you read out their goals and what they wanted to achieve. And this is, we're talking, you know, May 2013 to where they are now. And it was quite, I think it was quite, you know, a special moment when you realise and you read what they said 4 years ago and what they've achieved. You know, someone like John Muldoon talking, and he had down, he wants to win a trophy, he wants some silverware, he wants to, you know, as one example, and, you know, 3 years later he managed to achieve that. So things like that, when saying goodbye. And then I had my own office for one-on-ones, and then the amount of guys that popped in and shed a few tears and said goodbyes there. So it was a bit of both, saying publicly and then individually.
Yeah. You probably shed a few tears back, I presume. Are you that sort?
Yeah, I do, of course. You don't plan to shed tears, and I always believe, you know, emotion just happens from the situation or the experience you're in, and so you never know, you can't plan them. But, you know, it's been an overwhelming, time here, and I've really, really enjoyed it.
How are your family feeling about the move?
Yeah, they're getting to get into grips with it. You know, we know they're used to starting up again in different places. It's always the goodbyes that is the hardest bit. And, but as it gets closer, and I think the fact that we've had so many farewells at different places, that sort of bring it all closer to home. And, you know, and yeah, it's not easy, but, you know, it's also probably the best place we've ever come to.
Yeah, because I remember we did that TV3 show a couple of months ago, and you were saying your wife was definitely upset with this move. This one was hitting her.
Yeah, it was at the time, because it's but I think that's like any reaction. You know, the grief kicks in first, and then, you know, eventually you get your head around it, and then you start the goodbyes, and then the realization we're not too far, and realization that, you know, people we'll visit, and people, you know, we've had a great time here.
Yeah. The nature of your job is it's a nomadic existence, obviously. The concept of home for you, what, like, when I say home, is it Auckland? Is it just family? Have you given that much thought?
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's there's no doubt, you know, we're born and bred in Auckland, and that will always be where, you know, the place that, that I suppose you say home. But really for us, we always say that, because a lot of people have said to us, you know, you need to give the kids roots, travel and move them around a place. But we found, right, and what I've seen and what we know is that as long as myself and Steph are together and are committed and, you know, we still love each other after nearly 30 years, that's what gives the kids the roots, you know, and wherever we've gone. And so we've always made a conscious effort to make sure that the kids are fine. And they've loved, I mean, I've seen my kids grow just from the places they've been. And certainly here in Ireland, the youngest one's got the Irish accent, and but they can all pull off a really good Irish accent. And but they've loved the time here. And and obviously one of my sons is still staying here in university. So yeah, it's been a special place for all of us.
Yeah. What are you proudest of? Obviously there's winning the Pro 12, and that's a headline achievement. But as you look at the past 4 years, effectively, what are you proudest of?
I think the biggest thing is the change, the real belief and mindset and the structures that we put in place here. You know, when we, I suppose Razzy, when I was talking to Razzy, Rasmus after the game, and he said, look, he used to look like, well, you know, well done. In his first year here, he realised how tough it is to win a Pro 12, and he'd noticed it, obviously, when he was in South Africa. But then when he came here and saw what the challenges that they face, and then realising we have bigger challenges as well, he said, mate, it's amazing what you've been able to do. And I just said, the reason why it is such a highlight is the everyone has to come together. And that's the sort of team Connacht is. Yeah, we can't rely on different people. Everyone has to do their bit. So the thing I'm pleased about is that we have things in place that Kieran Kane can come now, come in, and here's the recruitment retention process that we have in place. Here's the leadership group structure that we have. Here's the different the way the board and the head coach are. So everything's in place for him to come in and carry on and build on what we've done and bring his flavour to it. And that was always the purpose, is the same when players go, the next player comes in. But the biggest change really was around mindset, not worrying. History tells us where we've come from, and we know there's a history there, and people will talk about, you know, being disbanded almost, and, you know, and we don't have this. But I think the fact that when I arrived here, we were the fourth province when we had the least amount of resources compared to the other three. We have the least amount of international players. Mm. But the fact that 4 years down the track, that hasn't changed. All of those facts are still there. But what has changed, and, you know, particularly in the last 3 years, we're the only Irish province that's won a trophy and some silverware, which emphasises, again, the quality of the work that had to happen and the belief that went into that's now here. Mm. And I think the other one is I'm really proud about the five counties coming into one. You know, that everyone knows Sligo, Leitrim, Roscommon, Mayo, Galway is Connacht. It's not just the Galway team. It's based in Galway. But, you know, we've got right and out there in the community. And as I've gone around, the amount of pride, you know, like, it's funny, in one moment I'm standing in Galway and talking about kids in schools around Galway and be proud you're from Galway. And the next moment, Mayo, so be proud you're from Mayo and Connacht. And then I'm in Roscommon, and people that out there and all excited, and I said, yeah, be proud you're from Roscommon, and you know, and that's, you know, getting to know people around all of that area, that's been a highlight.
Yeah, because I thought that was a bit naff at the start, this five counties business, and actually as it went on I thought, God, it's actually really, really important. I don't know why. I mean, maybe there's an Irish cynicism about this kind of stuff in a way, but you could see the province actually really getting behind Connacht and taking great pride in Connacht. It's one of the more lovely things about last year in particular.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I keep some highlights and, you know, some programs and, you know, and some, but one of the key ones I've taken from here is the amount of letters that I've got from people right throughout the province, from school kids and business people, just giving me their story. And the amount of letters that said, I'm not a rugby person, but I'm a GAA person, but I love the fact that what Connacht's done for the West of Ireland. You know, those sort of letters have been pretty special, so I've kept hold of all of those, and that's just as rewarding as the winning the trophy.
Yeah. So I know you're, as you've said, you're very proud of all that stuff, and you're very proud of the structures in place now, and that the fact that everyone has the same vision for what Connacht should do, which wasn't the case when you arrived. Nobody, you know, you'd ask people what's the vision here and you get different answers, and that's all very important. From the outside looking in, what was also just amazing for a lot of us was that last year in particular, but the whole Connacht journey with you and Connacht, it's like this demonstration of, I guess, growth mindset. The point is your ability, your talent levels, your skill set is not fixed. And I think a lot of people would look at most sports, most teams, and think, well, the only way to improve is to get in bigger and better players. That you can't really improve a team that much. You know, you can't improve a 27-year-old's skills that much. Last year, as fans were shouting, kick it, and you refused to kick it and trusted the skills which had been built up. That was one of the most stark and dramatic examples I've ever seen in Irish sport of players like Muldoon, all of these guys. Yeah. Who actually improved aspects of their game. It was incredible to see it culminate last year the way it did.
Yeah, I think it's a massive part of the game, and I did it from day one, but that's why I brought Dave Ellison, and he was a big loss when he left halfway through the season, headhunted down there. But I just did my exit interview with the Rugby Advisory Board with Connacht, and one of the areas that I did say is that, you know, with the coaching group going forward, I said it's really important because of the dynamics of what we have as far as resources and the type of players that we have, that we, it's important. And it's the same. I mean, I'm going to be the same with Bristol. You know, I've hired Bruce Rehana as the skills coach. And I said you need to make sure that area doesn't drop off, that, you know, the player, because we need to bring players through. Thing that I am really pleased about, and I think we must have had some sort of influence in it, is, or we'll claim it, was if you think about when we played this time last year when we were winning in Leinster, the, a lot of the things that were coming out from Leinster was, you know, we need players, you know, we need to get that. And I looked over there thinking, oh my gosh, a lot of these guys in the academy, and obviously we're bringing them through in skills, and then they've gone full circle this year, where they finally brought these guys through, and they're talking about the quality of the academy, they're talking about the quality of the players that are coming through, and that's what Irish rugby has. I said it many times when I first arrived there, because my younger son was playing club rugby for Galwegians, so I'd go out to Ballinrobe, out to Athlone, Buccaneers and Sligo and watch them play, and I'd look in there, and then I get invited to talk to kids on Monday, and I watch all the minute. There's talent. It's just about what we do as coaches and our rugby program to bring them through. And so this year, I did watch an admiration of Leinster. See, well, good on them. They're finally bringing those guys through, and they need to, because they're there.
Yeah, that's a really important point, because I think a lot of us do go around under the impression that the Irish skill set is just not great.
No, it's wrong. I think it's for me, it'd be the coaching.
Right.
You know, you got to give them the experience, but it's the coaching that needs to bring them through. And if you look at Richie McCaw, played more tests than anybody in the world with the most successful team, and in a position that has high attrition rate. On his last day before the World Cup final last week, he was still out there doing his skill work. And I use that as a lesson, because, you know, I watched Richie McCaw come through when I was in New Zealand, and he wasn't the most talented player, but geez, right. He put the work into it, into getting better at things that he could do in the back end of the career. There's no way you go back and look at videos, he couldn't do them. And that's an example that you keep going. And John Muldoon's a similar sort of character. And that's the lesson, that you never, if you stop working on something, or you stop trying to improve, we all know you stay still or go backwards. So it's really important, as I was saying to the Connacht, make sure that the skills program and developing individuals, don't just leave it to them to, we'll go away and work on it. It has to be driven. And, you know, I mentioned they need to get a roof over the Astros, the facilities they can, weather's not an issue, just keep getting the skill work done. And you'll get the better player and the better product. And I think England's done a lot of that.
Right. So in broad terms, for even just for the guy who's coaching the local under-8s team, that's getting their hands on the ball, passing over and over again, catching, passing, getting your head up. Just that kind of obvious stuff?
Yeah, without a doubt. We've had GAA players come in, you know, for the day. We had Camogie girls come in the other day with Alvarez, and we did some work there with them. And but we just did the same drills. And whenever I make a conscious effort, if I'm teaching 8-9-year-olds or the seniors, we take them for our drills and just slow it down and get them to go. But in one drill that we have in particular, in 30 seconds, you know, they're making, you know, 29 catch passes between three. Right. And 28 is a record. And, you know, when we started here, we could only do 16 in 30 seconds, and now we're at 28. And when I start with kids, you know, they start off slowly, but you can see them get competitive. But in that one drill, in the space of a couple of minutes, they're getting the ball through their hands quick, quick pass, you can tidy up a lot. There's so many things you can get them, but it's about, I always talk about the toolbox of skills. Anything they've been taught along the way, I'll never rubbish anything, because the best rugby players is growing their toolbox. And yeah, they might have learned something when they were young from this coach. That's great, keep it in there because you use it, but there's so many tools you need on the rugby field. So just trying to add to them, add to your toolbox so that, you know, you can pull off things that when you need it under pressure.
It's a thing which runs through Irish sport. It's in our football, it's in our GAA, it's in our rugby to an extent. I don't know, is it something in our psyche? We don't necessarily celebrate flamboyance in general life. We like people to keep the head down and don't get above your station, and so we prize defence and grit. And for whatever reason, I think there is more of an emphasis on hard work, and it's celebrated more as opposed to, oh well, he's a luxury player because he's skillful. I think that floats around Irish sports still to an extent.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not just limited to Ireland. I think but it's really important that you focus in on what's important, and you're not too worried. And I always say this to whether I'm talking about players or whether it's schools, is, you know, not to get yourself worth on judgment on what people say. You know, it's about true success is being able to look and understand what you've been able to achieve. And I think when I look at, you know, there's so many examples you can, I mean, you look at Ty Furlong, for example, and Jack McGrath. You know, those guys are class, but look at the skills that those boys have. And it just, there's enough examples to show guys that things are possible. But it really comes back, obviously, the coach, like when you go to one place, each player, they're now, the Connacht boys are now going to be in transition. They're wondering what Cal Kieran's going to run the game and so forth. But the coach has a big emphasis on the belief and on the mindset, because one of the things I didn't really want my players ever to have is fear. You know, fear or worried about making a mistake. But if you put the work in and you train, so you can channel that Irish focus on hard work. And without a doubt, it's one of the hardest working players that I've worked with before. But channel it into being more skillful as well, or channel it into, you know, they're going to be here, but let's make sure if they're going to work and they're actually going to be there, make sure that they can actually tackle properly, make sure they can actually pass properly. Yeah. And then you get a you know, it's amazing what you can achieve as a team.
You mentioned there when you're in speaking in schools. Could you talk to us about your decision to go in to speak to schools? It's not like you don't have enough on your plate already. And I'd be very interested in your impressions of Irish kids.
Yeah. I suppose when I decided that, you know, it's no different when I go to Bristol. I was just talking about there that I want to get the team into the clubs and get them into the schools and that, because you have to, when you're representing a team, you got to actually know who you're actually representing, who is Bristol, who is Connacht, who is Leinster, and it is the people, that's the area you're from. And professional sport has made it difficult in the sense that where we all grew up, like GAA, you play for your hometown, you knew what it's about, so you need to find out what it's about. And the only way you got to do that is get into the community, get an idea of what's important to them, get an idea out there, an idea that they can also be close to you as well, that you're not, oh, that's just the team I see on TV, and see that you're actually real. And it's, so getting into the clubs was important, but I suppose, but when we were going into the clubs, what I picked up really quickly was just, it was all rugby people. And I really, and that's not what the West of Ireland, that's not Connacht's about. It's, so, and then the other issue was, I wanted to get in there, and the suicide issue is a big one, and it affects everyone worldwide. But I wanted to get into schools, and I was a school teacher myself, and I enjoyed doing school assemblies, but bringing the boys in there, because you're now touching with people who aren't sports people, who aren't rugby people, but the young people that are all important, and getting the guys in there to realise rugby isn't just about, you know, the whole values isn't just about playing the game. It's about looking after each other, respect, hard work, all of those things. But then able to get some positive messages out there and try and make a difference. And that's ultimately what everything's about. Try and make a difference, whether you're a rugby coach or a father or a husband or you know, and we know we have that ability, because we have that ability to influence, but you can use it both positively and negatively. And I chose to take the team in there, and it was twofold. So it helped them, but it also helped the players and the management, because they started to connect into seeing what it's all about, and this goes back to the philosophy about improving them as players, but also improving them as people, where you get them in there, meet people, and that's how that's what enriches us.
And what was the response you received when you talked about mental health, for instance?
Yeah, really good. Obviously, the main thing was talking to the principals first. So right. I know that as a school teacher and give them an idea of what we want to do. And they were all totally receptive for it because it's real life. That's what's happening in the world. There's no point putting it under a carpet and not ignoring it.
Well, it's an epidemic in this country.
Oh, it is. It is. And there's so much pressure. I mean, I'm going about to do Yates School here, the Leaving Cert. I spoke at another school recently about to the Leaving Cert students. And then I spoke to a primary school recently, to the whole school within the sixth class, because they're about to go from the oldest in the class to suddenly the youngest in the school, the oldest in the school to the youngest in the school, and dealing with those pressures.
Yeah.
So I did some work with them about dealing with peer pressure and being able, and some skills to deal with peer pressure, because they're in for it's a big change. And also say, don't be afraid of it, just be prepared for it.
Mm.
And it's the same with Leaving Cert, but I think going into those, there's so much pressure on kids, and even more so these days because of social media. And before, when it came to bullying and verbal bullying, if you heard something, that would affect you. But now they can see it. They can turn their phone on. Boom, there's a message there that made, you know, that can affect them as well. So it's trying to give them you know, some tools and some messages that will hopefully help them and understand, you know, where to put their focus on and not, you know, but more around the people that, you know, believe them and believe in them and love them, you know, focus on those people. And when I've done a couple of things, there's no doubt everyone has someone that they can turn to and realizing they're not alone.
Mm. You did an interview with David Kelly in the Irish Independent a couple of weeks ago, and you talked about the culture at Connacht. And it's very early in the morning for me to be talking about these kind of things, but you said culture is love, and you talked about the importance of connection. You talked about, you know, we've talked before about the handshake and the emphasis on if a guy's sitting alone at breakfast, the difference it makes when everyone who walks by him acknowledges that guy. All of this stuff is linked, all of this stuff ties in, but connection, love, these are big words for you.
Yeah, they are. I mean, like, you know, I was brought up in a Christian home, and but I remember when the Ten Commandments came out, and eight out of those Ten Commandments was thou shalt not, thou shalt not, thou shalt not. And they're all rules, you know, and they're all right. I was just making clear God decided to make a plan that it's so there's no black and white. Killing someone is wrong, you know, and all the other rules. But it obviously wasn't working too well, you know. And so, you know, and then now obviously that's when Jesus came down and he kept it really simple. And he says, look, just love the Lord your God with all your mind, your heart, and your soul. And then love your neighbor as you love yourself. So I grew up. And it wasn't until later in life that I started to realize, geez, I grew up knowing God, loving God, right? And I'm not saying I'm perfect or anything, but I just had a relationship, which then by doing that, you realize, you know, I need to love my neighbor. Who's my neighbor? Then that's the people you come in contact with, you know? And the only way you can do that, you can't really do that properly, if you don't love yourself. So it all starts being able to lead yourself, understanding who you are and being confident with yourself and not taking your judgment on other people. And then it's about, then you can reach out to others. And so when it came to, when you define it, and, you know, obviously we know on Easter that, you know, Jesus made the ultimate sacrifice, but that's simply when you break it all down. Love is sacrificing oneself for the benefit of others. If you know, I mean, you know, I know for me, I love my wife, you know, I'll do anything for my wife, I love my children. And it's this, that principle of love, is, and it's all been messed up in all sorts of different ways people try to describe. You know, I love ice cream and I love my wife at the same thing. It's there is a difference, and we all know what it is. It's when you make a sacrifice. So I brought that in to emphasize to the players, if you think about on defense, you know, if someone's overrunning and he needs your help, you're sacrificing yourself. Or when your mate's on the ground and you got to clean out, you make a choice. You don't have to do it, but if you get over and look after him and look after the ball, you're sacrificing yourself. So bringing it right back to understanding that, what real love is. And then, of course, the relationships and connecting with each other. The handshake is all about connection. So it's all building the big philosophy around, you know, better people, better rugby players, better team. A team will always beat individuals, but you have to do that day to day. And that's why, you know, people are saying to me even now, you know, Pat, you go into the championship, you know, how are you going to, what are you going to do there? You know, I said, well, I can't control who we play week to week. It comes back to what we do day to day. And the game at the end, whether it's against Elin or Rotherham or whether it's against Saracens or, you know, Toulon, it doesn't matter. It all depends on what we've done during the week. And so everything we do had a plan, a purpose to the big plan.
Yeah. I'm pretty much nailed on atheist, or maybe on my most, that the most miraculous moments of life, agnostic. But it does strike me to have that faith must be an unbelievable comfort throughout your life. I mean, does it waver, or is it always there for you? And has it been the source of comfort? I suspect it probably is for people.
Yeah, I mean, I said from the very beginning, it's like, as I said, I said this to the team when I arrived, is, you know, to me, people might say I'm a religious guy. I'm not a religious guy. I'm not a fan of religion whatsoever, you know, but I'm a Christian because I don't believe personally that I came from a monkey or evolved from a monkey, you know. I believe in God, but the big one for me, it's a personal relationship. So, and as I said, what it did do for me once I have a personal relationship with Jesus is that it wasn't about saying, you know, you're a Muslim or you're a Mormon or you're a Catholic or you're a Presbyterian. It's not for me to judge any of that. It's my relationship. It's about me. It's about me and my connection and my faith. Once that's, you know, so I said to the guys, so a lot of things that whatever I do, I need to make sure that I'm right. And that's the way I am. Now, if you're an atheist, mate, that's totally your decision. And that's why I said to the boys, we're all the best thing we got given in life is the freedom of choice. But with every choice, there's consequences. And the consequences can be great or not. And that's why I don't have drinking curfews. I don't have, all of these things. Mate, the grown man, we all got choices, but your choices have consequences. If you decide I'm going to have Supermax every single day of the week, but I'm going to, you know, play, I don't care. Well, that even though we've been given the nutritional advice, that's totally over to you. But there's a consequence that's going to happen from that. If you decide I'm not going to show up to training, there's a consequence, you know. Likewise, if you decide I'm going to do everything possible, there's a great consequence for you too. So, I mean, it's really important that that we're all individuals as human, and well, everyone's equal. Not everyone's treated the same because we're also unique, in the way we do things. And it's trying to relationships and time gives you a chance to work out how I treat John Muldoon might be completely different to how, well, it is to how I treat Bundy Aki or Tom McCartney or Andrew Brown. They're all different players, but you still love them the same.
Yeah. Final few points then. How do you reflect on this season?
There's a lot of challenges that went into this season, but it's like anything. This is, as I said to all the coaching staff and the players, you'll get more out of this season than you will out of last season. The last season was fantastic, and I've said to them right from day one, good times never change your character. You know, you go through, you ride it, and it's fantastic to be part of. But it's the challenging times is where you get growth. And everything I do and everything I do with the players, there's always two questions that, because people think success starts here and it goes all the way up, but it doesn't. It goes up and down, up and down. The only thing that gets you back on the up is asking the two questions. What did I do well and what could I do better? And if you ask that of yourself, of your team, regardless of the outcome, then you get serious success, because what I do well reinforces you're good at what you do. Could I do better allows the growth to happen. But if you focus only on what I do well and not really interested on the other, you end up going backwards and you miss out on massive chances to actually become a better person and player. So that's why I think this year, I mean, there's the learnings. Obviously, pre-season is difficult. The injury, we lost three guys to season ending. There's so many things that happen, but ultimately, we just weren't good enough this year. And from that, there's some great lessons to launchpad. But the good thing that we do have is when you compare everything, as I said at the beginning, you know, as I said to the guys, what we achieved for Irish rugby, you know, if you think in the last 4 years out of the provinces, Leinster won my first year, you know, Glasgow, ourselves, and now Scarlets. You can always be proud of that, but it gives you a template. It gives you a belief that anything can happen as long as we put the work in and keep taking the learnings.
Yeah. And as for your experiences of Irish rugby and where we can improve, you mentioned the six-month release clause in the contract. Effectively, your point is that's not backing the coaches 100%, and it gives coaches the opportunity to, you know, they're going to field job offers across November and December. That's your key point with that quirk in the Irish way of doing those managerial contracts.
Yeah, I mean, I was disappointed the way that article came out because it's completely out of context. Right. With some of the local media, I did an hour and so interview and I talked to her, and I was just going through the process of, again, what's been done really well and what could improve. But it came out, the way it came out is Pat's having a go. And but it's like, I'll only say things if I think it's for the best. And it's like when I came out a few years ago and said, Connacht needs a stadium. I can vision, I can see it. And then a few people said to me, Pat, you know, don't talk it out there. But what's happened there? I can see there's work going on now to get a stadium. The coaching one, and I don't want this misinterpreted, is that bottom line is the decision that I made, I don't regret the decision I made that this is the right one for me to go. The fact is, the clause, it only came about because there was a clause in the contract. What I think for going forward, and so to, because the Irish players and also for the coaches, because we talk about this all the time, a lot of those coaches, we talk about this clause. I just think it needs, New Zealand used to have it, it just needs to go out so that it's all for the benefit of Irish rugby, that you get a coach in here. He's there for 2 years, and then you get to try and get as much CPD. I read an article recently with Steve Hansen and the All Black coaches in the mountains. He went to West Point. When I was in New Zealand rugby, I went to West Point too, because there's a lot of development and work into the coaches there at the professional game. Now, a lot of work goes into the grassroots coaches, the academy. But the most of Irish rugby's investment is in the professional players. It's really important that the coaches are supported right through. You know, we've got young Jimmy Duffy, Nigel Carolin's in there. Obviously, I'm taking Connor, and I'll give him development back with over in England. But growing the coaches grows the players. I mean, when I said the Champions Cup, I said our goal is to be Champions Cup when I presented it to the board. But I said, what do we need? The first thing I had was Champions Cup management team, you know, quality. And then the players, because you're going to give me all the best players in the world, but if you don't have a strong management team and coaching group, it's very difficult, because it's the program that works. So, so that's the point I was trying to make there. And but it's, again, it's not out of having a crack. It's more around for the improvement of Irish rugby going forward. And if it happens, and you know, and people are a bit upset that I said it, but if it happens down the line, then it's I'm glad it happened.
Yeah, I don't think anyone was that upset. I mean, it seemed like a perfectly rational point, and I won't edit your answer here and take it out of context. Is there anything else you think Irish rugby could do? Management of players, the number of foreign players allowed in, Indigenous coaching, you've touched on contracts, like as you're leaving, stuff that we could improve on?
I think it's in a really good place at the moment. I think the one area that I think can continue, I mean, you look at someone like Dominic Ryan now going to Leicester, I think other players. New Zealand, one of the things New Zealand did, and remember the Irish system is set up exactly like New Zealand, where it's, all the players are centrally contracted. You know, obviously, I'm not talking about national contracts, but centrally, basically, the RFU fund all the contracts. But New Zealand had exactly the same system, and they quickly realised they can't afford to be paying, they want the best 150 playing across the five teams. So they brought in the draft. And the draft, and everyone, particularly the big, you know, like Auckland, weren't happy about it. So players started to get drafted because they wanted to make sure the best players are playing. And but now the draft's gone after 10 or so years now, because it's just natural. What it created is players realise, I want to play for Ireland, I need to be in the shop window, so I need to be playing. And the job, there's four jobs available, you know, Leinster, Ulster, Munster and Connacht, all right? And we need all those guys in the shop window. And if we do that, then spreading that pool of talent, I think that's the next progression. Now, again, a lot of people won't be happy with that, but I think that's the way to go, because we don't have the same pool of players as elsewhere. But you've seen the talent. If all those guys that playing for Leinster through injury or whatever didn't get the chance, Robbie Henshaw never have. He didn't have the chances of playing the way he did at Connacht Rugby, you know, being able to come through. So I think spreading that talent, I think they got the foreign player rules is fine.
Okay.
I think the numbers are fine, because it's important that we bring that talent through. But the right foreigners coming in to make a difference coming through is important.
Well, listen, you've made just an unbelievable impact on Irish rugby and Irish life. You're beloved here. I think you know that. And I guess I'd just give you a final chance to articulate how you reflect on the 4 years and what it's meant to you and your family as you head off.
You know, I always believe life's a journey, and you meet as many people as you can along the way. And this 4 years in our life has been unbelievable. And I speak on behalf of Steph and the children. It's been life-changing. You know, we knew not many people at all coming here, and we leave with some fond memories, some wonderful friendships. You know, I... we just could not thank Ireland enough. And I know a lot of people are saying thank you to me and that, but it's certainly the other way around for us, that we have been taken in here, welcomed. I've met so many people from Ireland, but certainly the west of Ireland is a special place. I think the Irish language is special, and it's important, the Irish culture. And I've been touched to watch all, and I'm confident as I watch all these young people come through. And I'm not talking about rugby, I'm talking about the Irish history and traditions are going to be kept. It's a wonderful country, and I've no doubt, I hope 2023 Ireland is successful, because I think it will give more people around the world an opportunity to experience what me and my family have done.
Best of luck in Bristol. Thanks.
Yeah, God bless. Thank you.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.